Host and sponsors.
We are here with a group of firefighters, police officers, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, and their families to talk about firstresponders.com, the website devoted to the financial life of first responders. Excuse me, what's your name? Okay, Jim, tell me, what do you like best about firstresponders.com? Is it the credit card that tells everybody you're a first responder, or their competitive mortgage rate? Oh, it's the Responder Rewards Program. Exclusive discounts you and your family get from hundreds of retail outlets, from home improvement to electronics to clothing. Up to 40% off. Great. Is this your little doggy? Hey, buddy. Everybody seems to love the benefits of firstresponders.com. Right, everybody?
You speak your own language, we speak it too. That's because firstresponders.com was created by first responders, with benefits like great mortgage products, discounts at retailers, and the first responders credit card. It's not just a credit card, it's a badge. firstresponders.com.
One out of seven means they can all fall down, except for Sarah. Why? Because Sarah is uninsured. In fact, one out of seven Americans are uninsured. This isn't just a number or a graph in a report. It's people. Families with simple needs like wanting to provide for a child. And children who want nothing more than to be children. One out of seven of us is uninsured, but all of us have access to a voting booth. Make sure you vote with this issue in mind. Learn more and share your voice at voiceforTheUninsured.org. Oh, may I be one who sees what's in front of me. That's voiceforTheUninsured.org, because one out of seven is 45 million too many.
Thanks for tuning in. We are live in the studios, and you're listening to Health in 30 on WRCR AM 1300 Radio Rockland, and it's streaming live online. I'm your host, registered nurse Barbara Ficarra. Today, pediatrician and author Dr. Jennifer Hsu will join me to talk about heading home with your newborn from birth to reality. Dr. Hsu is a mother and a board-certified pediatrician at Children's Medical Group in Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. Hsu is editor-in-chief of the American Academy of Pediatrics book, The Essential Guide from Birth to 11 Years, and co-author of the award-winning book, Heading Home with Your Newborn from Birth to Reality. Dr. Hsu, in conjunction with the American Academy of Pediatrics, were generous enough to donate some books, so call in with any questions today at 845-624-1300. And joining us now to talk about heading home with your newborn from birth to reality is Dr. Jennifer Hsu. Hi, Dr. Hsu. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Barbara. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Dr. Hsu, what made you decide to write this book?
Well, it turned out that every one of our friends and our patients were saying that they had read all the baby books, yet they were still coming to us with questions. So we knew that there was still room for another baby book out there that really did a good job of addressing what parents want to know and not necessarily what doctors think that they should know.
And what kind of questions were parents asking you for?
Well, they were wanting a lot of practical information mixed with medical. So not just, you know, what to do if your baby has a fever, but how tight does your car seat have to be? And what we did was we took all the latest recommendations from the American Academy of Pediatrics and helped parents know how to put those into practice, like the best ways to prevent sudden infant death syndrome, how to breastfeed successfully, and things like that.
And what do you find that the biggest challenge for new parents are?
What parents come to us with are questions about things that are different, really different in babies than in adults. And, for example, feeding for babies is so different from adults, so it doesn't necessarily come intuitively. So we get a lot of questions about breastfeeding. We also get a lot of moms who are anxious about it because they don't necessarily have the support from family and relatives that people used to have when people used to live closer to grandparents and other families.
And with breastfeeding, too, I think a lot of people think that it's just something that's come so natural, and you do need a lot of information about it.
Exactly.
What's your take on it? What do you tell your patients,
the
moms,
first thing
about
is, as you said, breastfeeding is a natural thing, but it doesn't always come naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do know that breast milk is the best nutrition for babies, but that breastfeeding is not always best for everybody. And what we wanted to do is to make moms feel comfortable making the choice whether or not to breastfeed, as long as they have all the information in front of them about the benefits of breastfeeding and how good it is at preventing infections in babies. And the other thing is, once a mom decides to breastfeed, we want to make sure that she has the support for that from family members, from their pediatrician, from lactation consultants, so that she can breastfeed successfully if that's what she wants to do.
Right. And with the book, I just want to say, too, it's a very easy read, and it's simple advice, but it's practical, and you give it, and you and Dr. Jana, your co-author, actually make it very easy to understand for people, because it can be very overwhelming taking care of this little newborn baby, and it's very practical advice. So I just want to say that it's written. Yeah.
And the reason why we focused on the newborn period is because we really wanted a book that was short enough for parents to read before their babies were out of diapers and walking. And so many of those books are like encyclopedias, and ours really does focus on the newborn period, the first few months, and makes it a little bit more practical and relevant for parents.
Exactly right. Now, what do you tell new moms who are trying to juggle everything, and it just can be so overwhelming and exhausting, so taking care of their needs and then taking care of the babies?
Right. Well, the first thing is that they need to have realistic expectations of what they can do and what their baby is able to do. It's important not to expect perfection from yourself, because you're just setting yourself up for failure. Perfection does not exist when it comes to parenting. And if you just know that it's not always going to be smooth sailing with the baby, whether that's with feeding, sleeping, or traveling, any of those things, it just makes it a lot easier knowing that there are going to be bumps in the road.
Right. Talk a little bit about the newborn phase. For the listeners out there, maybe the new moms, the new dads, they're just bringing that little baby home for the first time. What's the first thing they should really focus in on?
Well, the first thing I tell them is that the parents are with the child more than anyone else. So you are the expert on your baby. And what our book aims to do is give parents information that will help them build confidence with their own baby. So many parents are nervous around their baby. They treat their baby like a fragile egg or something. We want to make parents feel secure, because the baby needs a firm grip and to feel secure when the parents handle them, rather than just trying to pick them up daintily with kid gloves. So you are the expert on your baby. The baby wants you to take care of him, and try to build that confidence so that the baby will pick up on it and feel secure also.
What should they be alert to if that something's not right, though, and they need to immediately call the pediatrician or their healthcare professional? What should be some signs?
In the newborn period, babies basically only eat and sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So if a baby's not eating or sleeping, then that's a warning signal that the pediatrician should get involved. A lot of times parents ask about, well, how do I know if my baby's getting enough, especially if they're breastfeeding?
Mm-hmm.
And what we tell them is that what goes in has to always come out. So if you're not able to measure what's going in, you can take a look at what's coming out on the other side. And a baby should have a pee and a poop with every feeding or close to it.
Right. And that language, actually, it's in the book, and it's perfect, because that's the way, you know, people respond, you know, talk about things.
Exactly.
So it's great. It is really realistic and practical.
Great. Yeah. Most parents we know don't say bowel movements.
Exactly. Right. So when they're feeding their babies, And they do have a bowel movement, what should they look for, though?
Well, here's where we get the questions, because I was mentioning that this is very different for parents, because they're not used to baby poop.
Right.
Baby poops are very different, because they're getting an all-liquid diet at first.
Right.
And so the poops are going to look very liquidy. It's normal for a baby to have a yellow, seedy poop that looks like mustard. Sometimes it can be green and pasty, and that's okay. We do get questions about what color poop is normal, and basically anything that's not black, white, or red is probably okay, because those are the ones that show that there might be something wrong with the digestive system. Everything else is pretty much fair game.
Yeah, and that's so great how you really talk about that, though, because it can really be scary for a new mom or dad out there, and they see this for the first time, and they don't know what it is.
Exactly, and that's where I think our book is very practical, because we answer those questions that are in the back of the parent's mind. A lot of times they don't feel comfortable asking the pediatrician what they think might be a silly question. And we do encourage people, you know, if you're not finding it in our baby book or in other baby books, if you're not finding the answer, ask your pediatrician because that's what they're there for.
Right. That's what I was actually going to say. Always question. If they ever have any questions about anything, they should always just speak up and find out. Just to relieve themselves, just to know that, you know, they have support and to know what's normal and what's not.
Exactly. And pediatricians really want to help you in the newborn period. It's an investment in your parenting career to feel confident and get things right in the very early months so that you feel secure in the way that you're taking care of your baby.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned sleeping a little bit before. Maybe you could go into a little more detail because once you bring that new baby home, I think everyone's sleeping patterns are totally gone.
Exactly. So babies don't have the same patterns right. as adults. They mm-hmm. won't do all their sleeping at night at first, and that usually doesn't happen until they're about 4 months old. On average, a baby will sleep 16 to 20 hours in a 24-hour period, and a common question is my baby sleeping enough? Is my baby sleeping too much? If the baby is eating enough during the awake periods, then there's no such thing as sleeping too much, and I tell parents to be thankful for it and not to wake a sleeping baby. But if you really do think that the baby's sleeping so much that he's not getting enough to eat, then that's a good time to ask your pediatrician about it.
And what do you tell? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, because babies sleep in short intervals, like every 2 hours, they'll sleep 2 hours at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Parents may want to try to get on that schedule at least temporarily so that they get enough sleep as well.
What do you tell new moms and dads when they put their baby down and the baby just cries? And
yes,
they just constant crying. And I mean, do you tell them? What do you tell them?
In the first few months, it's not possible mm-hmm. to spoil a baby. Now, when they get a little bit older, that's a different story. But if you're coming home with your newborn and your baby just cries, it is fine to pick the baby up and soothe her until she does settle down. It's not going to cause sleep problems down the road unless you keep doing that while she's 6 months to a year. So if your baby's crying, you can't settle her down, do pick her up and get her comfortable.
Now, what happens, though, the minute you put the baby down, the baby just starts crying? Would you tell them, it's so, I mean, I obviously you just said, you know, to pick them up and soothe them, but what about sleeping? Do you encourage that at all,
You know, it's not recommended mm-hmm. to sleep with your baby, to have your baby sleep in the bed with you, unless you can make your bed exactly like a baby's crib. And this means getting rid of all pillows and blankets and having the sides of the bed covered by, say, a wall, pushed up against a wall, mm-hmm. so a baby can't get trapped or fall off. So unless you're able to duplicate the crib, then it's best to have your baby sleep in a bassinet or a crib for safety. Some babies are just, once you put them down, they miss that body heat. So if you put the baby down and kind of lay on top of her, put your hand on top of her, keep her warm for a few minutes while she settles down, that's enough to get her to soothe herself and go to sleep.
Okay. And how about a fever? When should parents panic about a baby having a fever?
Well, if the baby feels warm, then that would be an appropriate time to take a temperature. And for a newborn baby, the best way to take a temperature is to use a rectal thermometer. For parents who don't feel comfortable doing that, before you leave the hospital after having the baby, have the nurse or doctor show you how to do it, because that's the most accurate. The ear thermometers usually don't fit well enough. The other thermometers don't get a good enough reading to show you a true fever. But if the temperature is about 100.4 or higher, or if the baby just isn't acting right, baby's really fussy or too sleepy and you can't wake her up, those are times to call the pediatrician right away.
Now, what would be the reason that an infant may have a fever, though?
Well, most of the time a baby has a fever either because he's overbundled, so warmed up by too many blankets, or has just been in contact with a parent's body heat and feels warm, or there might be a virus infection like a cold. But rarely it can mean that there's an infection in the baby's body, and it's important to catch that because if a baby does have an infection in the body, it can spread really quickly and get the baby very sick. So we advise parents to err on the side of caution, and any sign that there might be any type of illness, get the baby checked out right away.
And a fever in a newborn baby, what is that?
100.4 rectally.
Mm-hmm. 100.4 rectally, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how about bathing the baby? Is there any tips that you offer your
Well,
parents?
Yes, remember that a baby who's a newborn is not crawling around in the dirt, mm-hmm. not picking anything up yet. So chances are he doesn't get that dirty except for that diaper area. So a lot of parents want to bathe the baby every day, which is fine, but it's not really necessary, and it can actually dry out the skin. So bathing a baby about two or three times a week until he gets to the point where he's eating foods and crawling around is probably plenty.
And it is the best way in one of those little baby bath seats that they could just put in the kitchen sink? Or?
That's a great way. Mm-hmm. The best way is whatever makes you feel comfortable and have a good grip on your baby, because babies are definitely slippery when wet. And oftentimes for a newborn, the bathtub is just too big. So I do see parents who will bathe a baby inside the kitchen sink with or without a special seat. But whatever is comfortable for you is what we do recommend, as long as it's safe.
Okay. And what other kind of questions do new moms and dads come to you with?
Well, when there's a recommendation such as putting the baby back to sleep to prevent sudden infant death syndrome, as we talked about, well, how do you put that in place? Because if a baby really likes being carried or put down on his stomach, it's important to know some tricks of the trade to get him to fall asleep on the back. And one technique is to use swaddling, where you take a blanket and wrap the baby up kind of like a burrito, so that the arms and legs are really snug, and if he's lying flat on his back, he won't flail out his arms and legs and wake himself up. So swaddling is one technique. You can also, it's important also when the baby has so much time on his back to give baby some tummy time too, because otherwise what you see is a flat head or one flat side of the head.
Mm-hmm.
So having tummy time when the baby's awake, where he plays on his tummy and lifts his head and upper body, is really important. And if a baby likes to turn his head to one side, try to rotate the way you position him in the crib so he'll look at the wall turning in the other direction. And that prevents the head from getting flat on one side versus another.
And what about a baby that's colicky? What's the best advice for new moms and dads with that?
Well, colic is very common up until 3 or 4 months, and it usually doesn't start until 2 or 3 weeks. I think the best advice is to keep in mind that it does go away. And you can try things like shushing the baby, making that sound that sounds like the blood vessels in mom's uterus. You can also swaddle the baby, sway while you're holding him, things like that. And if the baby seems like he's crying more than an hour or two every day, then that's the time to go to the pediatrician. Make sure it's not anything else, such as there's infant reflux where the stomach contents come up and it feels like heartburn. So there are other things that could cause what seems like colic or baby crying that you might want to have checked out.
And how long did you say?
It's about 3 to 4 months. And, okay. And Dr. Harvey Karp has his DVD and book called The Happiest Baby on the Block,
okay,
that explains it as the fourth trimester. So basically, the baby's still immature, and that's why it's happening. So I like that way of looking at it. And then you can expect that once that fourth trimester is over, the baby will be more alert and happier.
Okay. For those just tuning in, I just want to let you know this is Health in 30. I'm Barbara Vaccaro, and we're talking with Dr. Jennifer Hsu, author and pediatrician, and she's offering practical advice for taking care of your newborn. And she's co-author of Heading Home with Your Newborn, From Birth to Reality. Call in with any questions, 845-624-1300. Dr. Hsu, car safety. Do new moms and dads come to you wanting to know what position they should put their baby in, whether they should be facing forward or facing backwards?
Yeah, parents do have a lot of questions about car safety. Mm-hmm. And this is really important because 80% of car seats are put in incorrectly. And usually what's going on is that the harness straps that hold the baby in into the car seat are too loose. They don't want the baby to be uncomfortable so that they're too loose. But if they are too loose, if you're in a crash, that baby's going to come flying out. So it's important to pull those harness straps tight so that there's not so much slack that the baby could slide out. It really is important to keep the baby backwards facing at least until the baby's a year old and 20 pounds, but longer if better, to 15 or 18 months if the car seat will allow it. And the reason for that is that babies are top heavy. Their heads are really big compared to the rest of their body. And if they're facing forward and there's a crash, the baby will have severe whiplash. If they're facing backwards, the car seat protects their head and their spine. Some parents say, well, my baby doesn't like to look at the back, or my baby's legs seem to get crunched up. Well, If the baby gets crunched up in a crash facing backwards, we can fix the legs. If the baby has whiplash facing forward, that's a lot harder to fix.
And how long should children be in car seats? Till what age and or what weight?
Usually children should be in car seats at least until they're 4 years old, when they can probably graduate to a booster seat. And for that age, kids need to be at least 4 feet, 9 inches, roughly, before they can get rid of the booster seat. Now, some car seats are different and will allow a child to be in one of those five-point harness-type seats until they're about 80 to 100 pounds. So there are a lot of new products these days that will help children be safer in a car for a longer time. And it's also important that all children under the age of 13 sit in the back seat.
Under the age of 13, okay.
Correct.
Let's just go back a little bit to feeding. I don't think we really touched upon that, though. When should solids start being introduced in a little newborn's diet?
Well, the recommendations these days is to wait until the baby is 4 to 6 months old. And a lot of grandparents were of a generation where they were feeding their children baby cereal right around 2 weeks, really early. But now with what we know, if you wait a little bit longer, till 4 to 6 months, there's less of a chance of developing food allergies. So the recommendation is 4 to 6 months. If you're breastfeeding, it's better to wait until about 6 months. But it's something that parents can talk to with their pediatricians at their checkups.
Now, do they increase their the milk intake then if you're waiting a little longer, or it's still the same amount of milk?
Well, if the baby seems to not be satisfied by the current milk intake, then yes, you would want to increase that. But a lot of times, especially if you're nursing, mom's breast will adjust and produce the right amount of milk as baby gets older. But at the point where the baby's not satisfied by about 8 times a day of nursing or about 32 to 40 ounces of formula per day, then that's probably time to think about starting solids.
What would the best advice be that you could give new moms and dads right now, if for those listening, if they're just bringing their little newborn home right now? What would be the best thing that you could offer them?
Just in general, you mean?
In general, yeah.
You have to take care of yourself first before you can take care of anyone else. It's like the oxygen mask rule on airplanes. You put your own oxygen mask on first before you help others, because if you are not healthy and rested yourself, it's going to be really hard to take care of another little person.
And it's important, I think, too, for new moms and dads to really reach out to other people to help them if they are feeling overwhelmed, because it can be a very challenging experience caring for a new little baby.
Absolutely. It really takes a village, and people move around so much these days and don't have large families to help them out. So reach out to your friends who have had children before, to your pediatrician, to relatives, anybody, because it really helps you realize that millions of parents have gone through this before you, and they might have some tips that can help you out as well.
Right. I love, actually, at the end of the book when you talk about saving the memories from your little baby, like what to keep and what not to. But you mentioned that you're not Martha Stewart or either your co-author, which was great to realize that not everybody is so perfect in, you know, organizing everything and saving everything. But what tips would you offer the new parents out there that they should save for mementos down the road from their little baby?
Well, decide what's important to you. I'm kind of more of a picture person, mm-hmm. and so I take a lot of pictures. They're all sitting on my computer, but they're there for the time that I actually want to stick them in a scrapbook. You know, other people like to keep mementos like the first lock of hair that they get cut off and things like that. Some people have saved the umbilical cord stump, the blanket from the hospital, the baby cap from the hospital. Birth announcements are a great thing. My co-author Laura likes to take a picture of her baby on the scale with the time that he was born so that she can capture all of that at the same time. I'm definitely not that talented, so I take pictures and save them for when my son's older and wants to take a look at what he looked like when he was young.
Right. The trick is now getting him off the computer, though. That could be the hard part.
Exactly, and when the time comes, it will happen.
So I know I keep asking you this question about what advice you would offer to parents, but when you see new moms and dads coming into the office bringing their baby in for their checkup, what do they have a lot of questions about immunizations and things like that?
They do. And what I would say is whenever you have a question, ask it, because your pediatrician is not going to know what's important to you. One question I get a lot is, when is it safe to take my baby outside? Well, that's pretty much any time, and we want you to get out with your baby rather than stay inside. The baby was already outside of your house when he was born because probably he was in a hospital. Mm-hmm. So if you want to go take a walk, if your baby has just come home, go for it. What you want to avoid is closed spaces like airplanes or places where there are a lot of sick children, such as child care centers in the wintertime, because when those germs are hanging around, it's more likely that the baby can get sick with a fever, and then we have to look to see what's causing it. Mm-hmm. It's also important to have anybody who's visiting and wants to hold the baby to wash their hands before doing so. But, you know, whenever there are any questions that sound pretty simple, but you're just not sure of the answer, ask your doctor, because that's what they're there to help with.
All right. And with the immunizations, they're on. You offer, as most pediatricians do, I have a schedule.
Right.
I mean that they can take home with them, and so they know what they're
exactly
going in for.
Right. So they'll get an immunization schedule, and mm-hmm. oftentimes they will be offered the first hepatitis B immunization in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So that's a good time to ask about it. And if there are any questions about immunizations and side effects and what they're protecting, definitely ask your pediatrician. But what I can say is that these days the immunizations are so pure that even though there might be a larger number of actual shots or injections that the baby is getting, mm-hmm. they're smaller particles of the bacteria and viruses that we're giving to the baby to cause their immune system to make antibodies. Okay. So the vaccines are safer than they ever have been before.
Right. And just talk quickly about crib safety. I don't think we really brought that up at all, but what should new moms and dads know about their cribs?
Well, all cribs manufactured now need to follow standards, and the slats, the crib slats, need to be spaced no wider than 2 3/8 inches apart. So all new cribs will follow that guideline, but if you're inheriting an older crib, you might want to rethink that because it might not follow the latest safety guidelines. And you also want to keep your crib very plain. You can have decoration during the day, but take out stuffed animals, take out fluffy blankets, anything like that, anything loose toys, anything with small pieces while the baby's sleeping, because that's just not going to be safe.
And three tips that you could offer right now for people listening with their new little baby, what would they be?
Three tips. Believe in yourself. You are your baby's expert. Okay. The second tip would be, you're not alone. Ask other people for help, your family, your friends, and mostly your pediatrician, because your pediatrician will be able to help you decide what advice that your family members are giving you is actually what's recommended now with the medical information that we know. And third, I would like to tell people to have fun. Being a parent is mostly fun, so try to relax so that it's enjoyable for you and for your baby.
Great. Dr. Jennifer Hsu, thank you so very much for joining us today. Thanks for providing the listeners with insight and practical advice for caring for their newborn. For more info, go to jenniferhsu.com and the American Academy of Pediatrics, aap.org. And just a quick note, I just want to say that I commend the AMA for taking a stand on the issue of the uninsured. Instead of turning their heads on a major healthcare crisis, they stood up to the plate and formulated a plan. They welcome your suggestions, ideas, stories, so go to voiceforTheUninsured.org. All Americans deserve health insurance. There should be no reason that there are 47 million Americans without it. And the AMA has taken a stand, and just so I'm referred to as not being biased, if there's any groups, organizations, or associations out there that has another plan in place, contact me and I'll get you on the air. I'm Barbara Ficarra for Health in 30. Have a great week. And for more info and upcoming shows, keep a check on the website, healthin30.com. And we have some books to give away, so go to the website and go to contact us at healthin30.com. Always take charge of your health. Speak up and ask questions. I'm Barbara Ficarra for Health in 30. Have a great week. Stay safe. And now these words.
We are here with a group of firefighters, police officers, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, and their families to talk about firstresponders.com, the website devoted to the financial life of first responders. Excuse me, what's your name? Okay, Jim, tell me, what do you like best about firstresponders.com? Is it the credit card that tells everybody you're a first responder, or their competitive mortgage rate? Oh, it's the Responder Rewards Program. Exclusive discounts you and your family get from hundreds of retail outlets, from home improvement to electronics to clothing. Up to 40% off. Great. Is this your little doggy? Hey, buddy. Everybody seems to love the benefits of firstresponders.com. Right, everybody?
You speak your own language, we speak it too. That's because firstresponders.com was created by first responders. With benefits like great mortgage products, discounts at retailers, and the first responders credit card, it's not just a credit card, it's a badge. Firstresponders.com.
Diabetes and no health insurance can be a lethal combination. So can heart disease and no health insurance. Even strep throat without proper care could turn serious, even life-threatening. That's why at the American Medical Association, we're fighting back with a combination of our own. Today, physicians are caring for many uninsured patients, and they're speaking out with them to make sure all Americans have coverage. One out of seven of us is uninsured, but all of us have access to a voting booth. Make sure you vote with this issue in mind. Join me and share